Welcome to the Work Revolution podcast, where we believe, in fact, we know, there's a better way to work and live. And we are here to challenge the status quo of obsolete workplace practices and ideas about leadership. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Deborah. Along with you, our listeners, we're evolving our thinking about what it means to belong, innovate, and create change at work. Join us as we dispel the myths of meritocracy, hierarchy, and other bullshit practices that get in the way of all of us harnessing our full potential to make a better world.
Hey, JP, how are you today?
I'm good, Deborah. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm grateful to you for agreeing to have this conversation. So you're going to share a story with us today that I think is an important one to share because I think it's a situation that's more common, or situations like one you've just experienced is more common than we might like to think or that we might realize. And so I appreciate you doing that. And before we get started on that, how are you feeling about sharing this story? Honestly,
a little nervous. It is a bit of a punch in the gut. So it is a little nerve-wracking, yes, I will admit.
Yeah. And I think as we go along, we can talk a little bit about why that is. I think that's a very common feeling for people who go through restructurings, downsizing, job loss for whatever reason. And I have very strong opinions about that, having done the work that I've done for so many years. And I think it says something about where we are with corporations today. And we were also, just before we started recording, just reminiscing about how long you and I have known each other.
Yeah, a long time. I think 2011.
Yeah. So over 10 years, we've worked together here and there over that time span in various capacities and have just always kept in touch. Yeah. So when you shared this most recent story with me, I was really saddened by it, but also I wasn't that surprised. So first of all, let's just start with very broadly, I'm not using your full name for obvious reasons. I think people do feel reluctant sometimes to go on the record sharing stories about like this one, but let's just shape out for the audience a little bit about who you are professionally. And we'll just use sort of broad, big terms about the type of work you do, industries you've worked in, and things like that, just so we get a picture of who you are at work.
Okay. So the majority of my career, I have spent supporting C-suite executives in the pharma, legal, financial worlds. So over 20 years of experience within that range of C-suites.
Right. And up to CEO level. So this is very senior level executive leaders that you're supporting. And you have a 20-year track record of doing that kind of work. Yeah. So tell us a little bit. We start this story with the end, the ending of the last period of employment with a large organization where you were supporting the CEO. So let's just start with how that ended, and then we'll kind of go into this most recent experience.
Okay. So I was supporting the CEO of a large organization. The organization is up for sale. So there was a lot of restructuring. And so he was part of that restructuring. And of course, 2 weeks later, I received the other end of his bullet, which I could see coming. I could see it quite a distance out. That was going to happen. So it wasn't a surprise. And yes, it's a little emotional. I mean, I loved working with him. He was an amazing boss, but it hurts a little bit, but I expected it. So I think I was able to come to terms with that transition fairly quickly.
Right, exactly. And how long did you two work together?
6 years.
Did you work together at a prior organization as well?
We did not.
Okay.
We did not, but we connected instantly from my first interview. And I actually used to work with his brother-in-law. And I said to him in the interview, oh, you can reach out to him and speak to him. And then when I started, I said, oh, so did you reach out to your brother-in-law? He's like, no, I didn't need. We just had such a great connection. And the entire time that I worked with him was really fabulous. I mean, there was ups and downs. There was times he drove me crazy, and I'm sure vice versa, but it truly was a great experience.
Yeah. It is a bit of a unique relationship, isn't it, in the workplace, that relationship between EA and that senior executive. I think there are a number of ways in which that uniqueness comes out. And one of the ways is what you just described. When that person leaves an organization, often the EA is not far behind. And likewise, people will often bring in, when they start a new role will bring in an EA based on previous relationships and experience.
Yes. Unfortunately, that couldn't happen with us because he took a role very far away from my home. So.
Right, right. Yeah. But it's certainly not an uncommon story in that role. So what kind of feedback did you get when you were leaving that organization in terms of your contributions there?
It actually floored me. Hopefully I won't get emotional. I had no idea the lives that I had touched and the people that I had touched. They sent me a card at the end. People didn't want to just email me when I was leaving the organization. They all wanted to speak to me in person. So at the time, there was not a lot of people going in the office. So I had lots of Zoom calls or Teams calls, and I was truly touched. I impacted people and their lives within the organization. I was reading the card a couple of weeks ago when I was having a down day, and I thought, oh, I just need to feel good. And I couldn't finish reading the card. I was crying because I was so touched by all the kind things that people had said. It's nice to know that you can impact people's lives in a positive way.
Yeah, and that's been recognized. Yeah, it's interesting how much work and the experiences we have at work affects us. We're people. We show up as a whole person with emotions and feelings. We can't park it. It's not really.
No, sometimes we're surprised by it. I am anyway.
Yeah. So you left, would you say, although there was disappointment, you left on a bit of a high note?
Oh, for sure. It was a stellar year for my accomplishments within the organization. So I definitely went out on a high note.
Yeah. So then you find yourself in the job market, which is not totally unknown to you. I mean, you've been in organizations that had restructured before and so forth. It's very common in a career today. And then you started an interview selection process with another organization that we'll just describe as being pretty familiar with this organization. I would say a large, well-established, well-known, reputable organization. I'll say broadly in the financial services sector. So just walk us through a bit about that process. And because I know you were being very mindful about wanting to make sure you landed somewhere that was going to be a good fit. And as in that type of role, how important that relationship is with the person you're supporting. So I know you were going into it like being cautious, so to speak.
Yes, very cautious. And because I had such a great relationship with my previous boss, it really, in the interview, the very first thing I will say is this is about fit. I have the skills. You can see from my resume, you can talk to my previous employer, you can see I have the skills to accomplish the job. It is about fit with the executive. So I had three interviews. The first interview was the hiring manager. Then they wanted me to meet with the VP of HR. And apparently that wasn't a normal discussion to happen, but the executive really valued the opinion of this particular HR business partner. So had asked if I would meet with that person. So I met with that person. It was a great conversation, went very well. So then I was meeting with the executive. And funny enough, the appointment with the executive was for 30 minutes. And right off the bat, I thought, okay, that's not enough time. I need more than 30 minutes to get to know an executive. And they need more than 30 minutes to get to know me if we're going to work together. So I did physically go to the office and we had an interview. It did last longer than 30 minutes. It just extended well over 60 minutes. But I'm a very open person. I'm very transparent. I just like to put everything on the table. Maybe I could say I'm an open book. So I had lots of questions and my questions were very specific on personality, my personality, the executive's personality, how the executive would handle situations, how the executive manages their team. Are they in the weeds? Do they kind of take the 60-foot level view? How do they manage this? And how do they work with their executive? What is the executive assistant? What is the relationship going to be like? So I asked some very pointed questions. One that I can think of is, if I make a mistake, how are you going to handle it? Are you going to talk to me? Are you going to be open with me? Are you going to tell me what I did wrong, how I did it wrong? Am I going to have a second chance? How are we going to deal with that? And I gave an example of an error of a mistake that I made with my previous boss in setting up a meeting and not inviting the right people and how that played out. I mean, I never made that mistake again because I learned from it. So really making a mistake is a gift, but as an executive, how do you handle that? And so their response was, well, if you make the same mistake 10 times, obviously there's a problem. But if you make the mistake once, it's good. So that made me feel comfortable that they would speak to me, talk to me. I did ask what happened to the previous assistant, because I always like to know, was it a personality issue? Did you just not work well together? Did they not have the skill set? What was the reason for the previous EA no longer filling this role?
And like, or they could have been promoted, or they could have just
moved. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. There's exactly. a myriad of reasons why. Yeah.
Yeah. It just gives you a little bit of insight as to why the role is open.
Exactly. Good question.
So just a couple of very pointed questions that I ask, and I'm not shy about asking very pointed questions because I want to get to know you and I want to make sure that this works both ways. It's not just, can I work with the executive? Is can the executive work with me? Can they handle my style? I'm a go-getter. I'm a get the job done. I'm not going to sit around and twiddle my thumbs. I'm very proactive and I need them to know that. And I have the confidence to do that. So I felt that the interview went very well. Like I said, it was well over 60 minutes. So when they called the very next day to make an offer, I was really happy because I thought this was a really good fit. So my fifth week in the role.
Like, how did it go at the start? Like the first few weeks, because this is a bit of an expanded role in some ways from what you'd done previously. And so like, tell us a little bit about how you were feeling like the first few weeks in.
The first week was rough because I got COVID right before I started the job.
Great. So, I don't have COVID, but I do have a cough right now. I do probably suffer.
So the first week was a little rough. I mean, you're learning lots of new programs, you're learning new things, you're meeting new people, and you're trying to recover from COVID. So the brain's a little foggy. But I was really impressed with how the organization was taking me through things and walking me through lots of different programs. Even if I had used them previously, we just want to make sure you're fully trained and you understand how everything works. So the first week was good, considering. Then the second week I started going into the office. I really loved the role. I have led a team of admins in previous roles, maybe 5 or 6. This was a much larger admin team that I was leading from globally, actually, lots of different continents that the admins resided in. So I was very excited. And I was teaching the admins things that their response was, wow, this is a game changer. Oh my goodness, I love this. So I was very excited. And I took charge in managing the executive schedule. The executive had a very busy schedule, but one doesn't. So I was really enjoying it and implementing different processes and working with my executive, trying to streamline how we would communicate with each other. Since the executive traveled extensively, I wanted to make things as simple as I could for both of us. I was very excited about the role and I was really enjoying the role. I felt like I hit the jackpot.
Oh, nice. And so then what happened in week 5, I guess it was, you said?
In week 5, my executive was on vacation. So when the executive was not in the office, I could work remote. So I'm working away and I get a Teams message. Are you at your desk? I need to see you. And my response was, may I ask who this is? I didn't recognize the name. Obviously, I didn't know many people. Oh, I'm with HR and I need to speak to you about a confidential matter. And the first thing that went through my mind was, oh my goodness, are they letting me go? Because the executive and I had not spoken about any HR issues it was only in week 5. So I just said, well, I'm working remote. You can Teams me. And so the Teams meeting opens up. There's 2 HR people in the room. So I knew they're letting me go. And they just said, it's not working out. Close your laptop. We'll have someone pick it up. So I was a little shocked, to say the least. Yeah, to say the least, a little shocked.
And so then what happened with the executive you were reporting to after that?
So HR gave nothing. I will say I was a little surprised because I've been part of restructuring where I'm on the end, where HR is, not being the person who's been let go. And always, they were always given the reason why, whether it was performance, whether it was restructuring, there was always something. Now, I recognize I was within the first 3 months of the probationary period, but still a little respect. So HR gave nothing. So after an hour or so, I messaged the executive by text and just said, I'm very disappointed. Could I get some feedback? I mean, if I did something wrong, I would want to know because I take pride in my work and I would never want to misrepresent or make an executive not look their best. I mean, that's part of my job is to make an executive look their best. So if I did something wrong, I would like to know. If it wasn't a good fit, if they just started to see my style and they didn't like my style, I would want to know. I just would want to know for my own closure. It's like you're dating somebody. Why is this relationship not working out? And so the executive said, sure, next week. And that was it. I never heard anything from the executive after that. I did hear from other people in the organization that the exact same thing happened to the previous EA when the executive was on vacation. HR called, said, okay, it's not working out. Thank you very much for your service.
So we have I've done a little bit of improv training. This is going to be a weird segue, but when after two things happen, that's a pattern. This is called a pattern of behavior now. And so how did you feel when you heard that?
The shock was literally unbelievable. I've been part of restructuring before and I was not shocked because I could see things playing out. I'm not 10. I'm 20 years in my career. I see things. Yeah.
Lots of corporate experience, been around the block as we all have. We work in big city,
yeah,
big organizations. We see this stuff plays out in large organizations a lot. If we haven't been impacted by it ourselves, we know people who have, or we have family members who have. Like, it's pretty common.
I mean, it felt like it came out of left field because there were no conversations or messages or indications of, I don't like it done this way. I prefer it done that way. You can't connect with this person directly, go through their EA, whatever. There was no indication that I was doing anything wrong or the executive didn't like the way I was managing things going forward. As a matter of fact, I would advise their spouse when they were traveling because their spouse didn't travel, but this executive traveled. So just to manage home life, the spouse needed to be advised. So because things change so rapidly, I would keep the spouse updated. And the spouse actually had emailed me twice within the 5 weeks saying the executive absolutely loved it, the work that I was doing, great job, blah, blah. And I just thought to myself, wow, I hardly started. I don't know what they could be loving so much, but that's great. I'm glad to hear that. So that was really the only feedback that I had in that 5 weeks. So yeah, definitely came out of left field. I said I felt like I was punched in the gut, but I almost feel like not even in the gut, but almost punched in the face. Like it just knocked me down and it knocked me down.
So what are some words you would use to describe how that felt? Like that feeling of being knocked down? Like, I mean, the word disrespect comes to mind.
Yeah, disrespect. Honestly, Deborah, I don't even know what words, even now, just talking about it, and it happened 2 months ago, the emotion that comes up within, because I didn't have the opportunity to defend myself, or I just don't know. I think if I knew why, it would be easier, or not that it's easy to deal with, but I would be able to work through the emotions and say, okay, you made a mistake, and it was a very serious one. You weren't on your A game, or it really was just the fact that our personalities didn't blend well. You're too assertive for me. I'm a little more docile. That's not how I like to work. Then I could say, well, I can accept that. I am who I am. I'm not going to change my personality and become someone who is maybe docile, or maybe I wasn't assertive enough. Maybe that's a little something I could work on. You could kind of manage it a little either way, but I can't change my personality. So,
but I think what I'm seeing, though, is it just leaves you really speculating. And our brain does naturally want, our brain, like it's natural human nature to A, want some closure, to want answers, to be able to have a clear projection of what the future looks like, too. So now being in this, sort of this grappling and searching, because you are left to speculate.
Yeah. And the energy that I wasted on that for 2 weeks, like literally I was so sick to my stomach, I could hardly function. And I messaged the hiring manager because we seem to really have a good relationship. And the hiring manager said, please do not waste any energy on this. Just close it and move on. Like, just go forward. And then that hiring manager proceeded to give me some contacts of people that I could reach out to in looking for a new role. So that did make me feel a little bit better. I think I'm over it, except now having the conversation, I have the sick feeling again. But I think I'm not beating myself up anymore over what happened.
And so how has that impacted being in the job market for you again? Like, how has that impacted? And I know it takes a bit of time, and over time, you feel differently, of course. But as you thought about going back into the job market, looking at opportunities again, interviewing again, how were you feeling about that?
A little timid, and I'm not a timid person, but a little timid. And I'm kind of working on some professional development avenues to, one, give myself that little extra boost of confidence, and reaching out to my network and like slowly letting people know I'm looking, I'm perhaps interested in finding a new role. It's amazing when I talk to people that I've worked with before or people that I haven't worked with, but just know me, the boost of confidence that they give me when they talk to me and tell me the amazing work that I've done and remind me of things, and just having those conversations and telling me, you got it, you can do this, and remember this and remember that. It really gives me that little boost of confidence. In the last few days, I've had a couple of people reach out to me just about roles, and it makes me feel really good. It really does make me feel good that, yes, I do have the skills, and don't let this incident knock you off your feet. Okay, it might knock you down for a little, but don't just let it pull the rug out from underneath you. Just get back up, brush yourself off, and keep going. It's like we tell our kids when they're running and falling, get up, brush yourself off, don't cry, just keep going. I'm trying to tell myself that.
Yeah, you're coaching yourself through, because you've experienced, and we take those experiences with us, and we're all impacted by the way we're treated by other people, the way we're treated in organizations, our experiences. And it is easy to forget those successes. When I'm working with people in career transition, to go through exercises, writing out your accomplishment statements, going through past performance reviews, and many people are, I forgot I did that and I did this. And reminding yourself of those things can be, it's just so empowering, because we do forget them, right? We do tend to be so hard on ourselves that when there is something that doesn't go quite right, we tend to fixate on that a lot more than we're going to fixate on the things that we did well or the successes that we had. So I'm glad to hear that you're getting those reminders. And I'm just sort of last big question before we start to wrap, but how has this impacted how you will go into your next work experience as you think about walking into a new company, reporting to a new executive? How has this experience impacted how you're moving forward?
I think I have to really think about my questions that I ask the executive. And I think I have to do a little bit of homework or strategizing on just making sure that we just have a conversation so I can kind of learn a little bit more about the executive and their style. And the other thing I was thinking is, when you interview for a job, they will ask for references and they will call your references. And I feel like if I'm going to be working for a C-suite executive again, that I want to talk to some people who work for that executive or have worked for that executive or have worked within that organization, and just kind of get other perspectives of working with that person. I actually did do that once in a job when I interviewed for a job, and I got the feeling that these were very managing type of executives. And I did pointedly ask that question, and categorically, no, they were not. Of course, a month in, they were very much micromanagers. So I left. It was not going to work. But I think sometimes when you ask a very pointed question like that, they do not want to admit maybe they see that you can see it. So they're going to categorically refute that. So sometimes that's just not the way to go about it.
It is so tricky because you have to wonder, is everybody being fully, like you said, I go in transparent, I'm honest, I'm direct, but is everybody operating that way? I don't think so. It's like being on a first date, right? We're all putting on, we're dressed in our best and we put on our makeup and we did our hair or whatever the more masculine equivalent that might be, whatever. And we're putting, we've got a bit of a face on in that process. And when you're checking references, there is this, and I love this idea, by the way, why shouldn't the candidate be able to check references? Like that boss relationship is going to make or break the situation. Usually the boss has a hugely disproportionate impact on the employee experience. And so why not be able to check their references? I think that's a really important point. But at the same time, are we really getting the true picture? Because even a reference is not going to want to say anything negative. Are they really being truly transparent, honest? Which also leads us to a part of the reason why we're being very anonymous with you today is because, as is very common, you signed an agreement when leaving the organization.
Correct. I would not say anything disparaging. I would not speak negatively of the organization, which I understand because I would not want them to speak negatively of me. What happens if I interview for someone who had a connection with that executive and maybe that connection remembered, hey, I think JP worked there, even though it's not on my resume because it's only 5 weeks. I would not want that executive to say anything disparaging about me. It just didn't work out. So I understand why you would have to sign something like that. And of course, you could go on any platform and start speaking very negatively. And it's just one person's experience.
Right. And do you see any downside to it, to having that agreement in place?
I mean, I think it protects both parties, but at the same time, will that executive continue to display this behavior? And will that just continue? As I reflect back on different things that executive has said, I can see a couple of red flags now. And just in having this conversation, I can see a couple of red flags. I didn't see that in the interview, only when we started working together.
Which makes sense, because to your point, even the booking of a half hour interview, and to your point, how are we going to get to know each other in half an hour, given how closely we will need to work together? And I often think that there maybe should be multiple conversations that happen with someone to really get to know them. And it may be starting with something quite formal and maybe getting less formal to get to know each other. And so, yes, you did spend more time together, but even just that booking of a half hour is, I mean, to me, it's quite funny. I get that we have to be efficient with our time. But one of the things that strikes me is that organizations put people through a hiring and like a selection process. They have their process that they use to find candidates, select the top candidates to move through the process, and eventually make that hiring decision. So if things don't work out, who's responsible for that? And so they chose you. They made that decision. And so could you have asked some slightly different questions? Maybe, but you don't have a crystal ball either. And I get that that goes two ways, of course, as well. And it's not about that. Sometimes stuff doesn't work out. It's fine. We're all adults. And I think that's partly what you're saying. I can handle it. I'm an adult. I've been around the block a couple of times. It's more the how this was handled. And if I understand you correctly, and I think I have a pretty good handle on this, that's the part that hurts. Yeah, it's not the fact that it didn't work out. Okay, move on. But it's how it was handled.
Yes, just let me have my dignity. And it was a large enough organization and there were other roles within the organization. I reflect back and I think, could you have said, this is not working out. I actually want to hire this internal person, which is what happened after I was let go, at someone internal took the role. There are other roles within the organization. Can I help you transition into a different role? Would you be interested in something different, supporting someone different? To me, that's an option. It's just giving people that respect and that dignity.
Absolutely. And there's many different ways this could have been handled. And there's a conversation that could have been had here that just was not had.
Yeah. Even that, just the conversation, that would have made me feel so much better.
Yeah, it's this idea of being almost ghosted in a way, right? We use the term ghosting a lot. It used to be for dating, but it comes up a lot in various employment situations, whether it's in the interview and selection process that someone is ghosted, or like what you've experienced where all of a sudden just person goes on vacation and that's it. Never see them or hear from them again kind of thing. Yeah. JP, I can't thank you enough for sharing this story with us. I think it's important that people share their stories. I think it's empowering for other people. And I think it shines a light on why corporate America is having some challenges, I think, because like I said, stories like this are not all that uncommon. Is there anything you want to say before we wrap?
Thank you for letting me share my story. If I can just help one person feel better, I love to help people. If this can just make one person feel better or recognize they're not alone, then it was worth bringing up that emotion again. So thank you.
And I appreciate you going there because I know we're human beings. We're impacted by these things. It is a very emotional thing to go through. It is a process. But I know how great you are and how great your work is. I've seen that firsthand for over 10 years, like we said. So we're going to stay connected and anything I can do to help you with next steps, I'm going to do that for you.
Thank you very much, Deborah.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Well, we're back. And I just want to start by thanking both Deborah and JP for having this conversation. And I'm going to start by saying two very contradictory things. One is, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. I've heard variations on this story many times over the course of my career. And in fact, it's happened to me. So I have both a lived experience and I've been party to other people having this experience. And then the other part of me that contradicts this totally is, I'm so surprised. Why does this keep happening? We know how to do this better. We know how to recruit better. We know how to make selection better. We know how to treat people with more dignity. We know how people's brains work and what they need in terms of feedback. We know so many things. And yet these types of stories keep happening and having the really very hard impact on people of really questioning yourself. When JP talked about her own sense of feeling her dignity was taken away, like, this is not what we want from organizations. If you're not happy with our work, sit us down and talk to us. We are grownups and we can take it, and we want you to be happy. So I guess that those are sort of my initial reactions, the conversation you had with JP. What's going through your mind about all this, Deborah?
It's interesting to hear you say that because it's not surprising to me because of the work I do over many years now. I sat with people in that moment of job loss, and I've worked with many people who have shared their stories of their career and career transitions with me. So for me, it's not that surprising. Although to your point, shockingly surprising, that's happening. And I think JP is particularly compelling because of how much she cares very deeply about her work, how I know what a level that she's operated at, the amount of experience she's had, the commitment that she has to it, and the due diligence that she took upon herself going through that process. So all of that to say, if it can happen to JP, it can happen to anybody, I guess, is what I'm saying. And so the one thing I might take issue with that you said is, I'm not so sure we know how to do recruitment and selection that much better. That I'm not so convinced necessarily. I think this is an area that organizations are really grappling with in terms of hiring and selection processes haven't changed that much, except for we use a bit more technology. And a lot of the technology is at the employer's end to almost project manage, have a database of candidates and have a way of tracking and organizing and pulling data out of there, sorting. I'm not so sure we've really got a really good way to hire and select people that we know are really matches the person in a way that we know we're making a hire that is going to perform well in the job. I think there's still a lot of throwing darts at the wall in this regard. And clearly, sometimes even when an organization makes what might look like a good hire, people are involved in this. So we don't know if it's going to work out. This idea of fit, I mean, on paper, JP was a great hire. So, but there was still something that this leader wasn't getting what they wanted. There was some sort of mismatch from the leader's perspective. We don't know what that was, but clearly the hire wasn't. What frustrates me the most about that is that it's the company's process, the candidate doesn't really get to choose what the process is going to be. And although they have a little bit of agency in that process in terms of how they conduct themselves, the type of questions they ask, things like that, really it's the company that dictates that process. They have their hiring and selection process. And if your hiring and selection process is selecting candidates, and then you have a leader who is making a decision, a hiring decision, and then that decision turns out to not be the right one, well, who's taking accountability for that? And that's really where I'm getting stuck on this one. That's really frustrating for me, is the lack of accountability that is being taken for a hiring decision that was not appropriate. And rather than taking accountability for that, and we could talk about, by the way, I'd be interested to hear you, what would that have looked like? What would accountability have looked like in this situation? But when JP shared that she learned that the same leader had done this exact same thing once before while on vacation, having some more junior HR folks deliver this news to someone after she had made a hiring decision. And to me, there's no accountability there. And ultimately, that decision rested with the leader. And that decision, if it was the wrong one, the accountability rests with the leader. And this is part of your job that you're not doing. And you're not being held accountable for doing a poor job. So I get really frustrated on that part.
I'm just going to say how this was handled is basically broadcasting to anyone who's in the organization or potential people who might be interviewing for jobs in this organization, is this is a culture of zero accountability. So if JP was not a good fit, that's fine. Everybody's not everybody else's cup of tea. But the fact that this was handled the way it was, to me, that's just wrong. It's just wrong. And listen, this is one of the reasons HR gets a bad reputation, is that HR business partners are often sent in to do cowardly leaders work for them. This is just, I mean, if anybody needed to be let go in this situation, frankly, it's the senior person, because he is not able to either choose people who he can work with and or handle the fact that if it's not working out, have a conversation. So I think that's one thing that I would say. The other thing I think it's interesting about this situation, and I think JP showed a ton of maturity and due diligence when she talked about saying, I'm a go-getter. This is what I'm about. I'm proactive. And I'm not sure. So we weren't there, but I don't know that this leader ever made it clear by what criteria that he had decided to bring her on. Because if after all of these conversations, she was the person they wanted, I mean, clearly they called her the next day to make an offer. What could have possibly happened in that period of time? I think that this just frustrates me, because when I say we know better, there could have been a conversation with JP saying, listen, like, we really want to bring you on board. We love all of these things about you. We'd like to make a job offer to you. Let us tell you, we had an issue with this leader before who rejected the previous candidate after a period of time. Like, be honest, be open. Let JP make her own decisions.
She asked specifically why that position was vacant.
Yeah, exactly. So in addition to there being zero accountability, it sounds like there's a real lack of candor in this organization. So as difficult as this was for her, I am so thankful that she's not there, because she deserves to be in a far better place than what this organization is and how it shows itself to be and how it treats people.
Yeah, and it's just a perfect example of, I mean, we have to imagine that the leader in this case must be a high performer in some regard, because they're being protected. I mean, this seems like protectionistic behavior, despite having a shortcoming in this area. And this is a great example of tolerating a lack of accountability and poor performance in certain areas to prop people up in other areas. But I think what organizations really need to get a much better handle on is what's the collateral damage to that. And so there's reputational damage. And even though someone, for example, like JP is not necessarily, and we are choosing not to broadcast any names here, of course, people in her circle know, and the people in the organization know, because they see it happen and they see their colleagues be exited in ways that are, this is one example, but it's pretty common in organizations to be exited in a way that doesn't really seem dignified or doesn't seem very people or human centric. And so I truly believe that is why we are seeing just a general sense of just a lack of trust in corporations and in organizations and in leaders in some case. If someone working in this organization is really going to develop a certain belief or attitude about leaders in that company, if that's the kind of thing that's tolerated. And then we wonder why we're seeing things like the Great Resignation and this term quiet quitting that's everywhere now. And I would say that's a natural outcome of that lack of trust that people have in organizations and this sense that they have that they're not really going to be cared for and they're not necessarily going to be treated well. And that can change on a dime. Could be things are going great one day for a period of time, something shifts in the organization, and that can all change. And most people have seen that happen, that swift change where now people are, they're out the door, they're being treated badly, whatever it is. So I think there is a significant cost, not to mention just the hard costs of going through recruitment and selection twice. And that, how long does that typically take? That can take a year, 2 years to go through that entire process to and make an offer and then have someone exited from the organization, go through that whole process again. Like that's a time-consuming, expensive process to go through. What's the cost of all of that to the organization? So I think this is a costly mistake. And I also think that this type of thing that has been happening pretty consistently over a long period of time now is just in a general way contributing to people's attitudes about work and this sense of engagement that we keep hearing about, whether you call it quiet quitting or whatever terms we use. I think this is one of the root causes.
You're reminding me of a team meeting I was in with a senior team of leaders, CEO and these executive VPs. And one of the leaders at the table who was, I have to say, was a little rebellious. And so as much as at times he irritated me, I was secretly cheering on for the fact that he could say some of the things he said. And one of the things that he said is, well, we're always talking about recruiting the best and the brightest. And within 6 months of them being here, like we basically drilled into them that they'd better conform and shut up about the things that they really think and what they want to do. And I thought, so many organizations, the culture of conformity is so strong, right? That it is very, even though people are saying we want original thinkers and we want to be challenged and we want to embrace failure, the way that the culture is actually lived and experienced goes entirely against all of that. So I'm wondering in the case of JP, if there's a desire to bring in go-getters and people who are really strong and who can make stuff happen and lead teams in a really powerful way. But the culture is such that there's a sort of traditional, ergo conservative way of thinking about how we actually do things around here. So I think that this is a cultural issue. And in relation to this boss, I think there's the line I use all the time is what you permit, you promote. So if you're permitting these kinds of behaviors, you're basically saying it's okay to bring people on and then let them go 5 weeks later. So that to me is, I mean, talk about a red flag. I mean, the flag is so big, I can't see beyond anything because these flags are so big. But the other thing that I wanted to mention, particularly and specifically about some of the things that JP said, was I loved when she talked about having, when she reflected on this experience, she had some learnings for herself, right? About how to really investigate, is this going to be a good fit for me? Like doing more due diligence than she did. I think this is a good tip for anyone who's in the job market right now. I know we all need money to pay for our bills and increasingly so with inflation, but we are spending chunks of our days, ergo chunks of our lives in these jobs. And our mental health, as we know, is hugely important and a priority that we do need to select places that are going to treat us with the dignity that we all deserve. That's one. So I'm glad she talked about really digging into how to investigate whether you'll be a fit in an organization. But the other, which was new to me, and I'd never thought about this because I've signed a few non-disclosure agreements in my time about how it protects both parties, right? So essentially you sign a document and that says, yes, we're going to give you a couple of dollars because we aired and we want to give you a little runway to find your next position. And also do not say anything bad about us. But when she said that thing about this goes both ways, that the employee's also protected, I thought that's actually a good point to raise. And I'm not even sure if the language in some of these documents actually says that. So if not, I think it would be a wise thing for people who are signing these kinds of documents at the termination or being laid off to check that in addition to no disparaging remarks made from the former employee, that the organization also owes a debt of dignity in terms of potential reference checking in the future, or even just bad mouthing around the water cooler, so to speak. Like, that's just not on. So I really appreciated her thoughtfulness and how she regarded the situation.
Yeah. The other point that I thought was really interesting is she talked about, why shouldn't I be able to do references on the leader if they're checking my references? I mean, I would be really interested to hear someone's experience with trying to experiment with that, with actually asking for references from the leader. I want to talk to three or four people who have reported to you in the past and talk about, isn't that like, why not?
This benefits everybody, right?
This benefits,
like, because you're basically establishing a relationship with someone. I mean, your income is tied into your job and your role and this relationship. So you want everyone to start off on the right foot. This is an excellent idea. What I like about it even more than the sort of equality of it is it gives people a sense that it erodes some of the feeling of the hierarchy, right? Where somebody was going to decide whether I'm good or bad for them, right? I too get to decide if they're going to be good or bad for me. I'm being simplistic in my language, but I don't know. I love this idea. I love it.
Yeah. And organizations need to start understanding that people's attitudes about work are changing. And in addition to that, we are moving into a time where we're likely to continue to see a labor shortage, and that is likely to increase. So we have record low unemployment right now. I'm speaking specifically in Canada, and there are lots of organizations that are really having a hard time finding people and retaining people. That's not likely to get better. That's going to continue to be a challenge. And although it's been talked about for seemingly forever about baby boomers retiring, it's actually starting to happen. I think the pandemic has somewhat accelerated the rate at which that's happening. So if employers don't really start paying attention to culture, and this is a perfect example of, this is just one workplace practice. I'm going to broaden it out to, well, there's two here, I guess, on the table, what we're talking about today. And we could dive into each of them much more deeply. They're both deserving of a separate episode. The way that people are brought into the organization, and the one that I'm really passionate about, is the way people are exited from the organization. Both of those are really key moments and key opportunities to influence what an employee's experience of that organization's culture really is. And I'll just stick with exiting the organization. Changing that experience for people, and especially if that could become a trend in organizations, that organizations across the board are starting to relook at how they're doing this and do it differently, that is just one example of a workplace practice that could go a long way in shifting around how people are treated at work and what workplace culture is like for people.
Well, it reminds me of that line, how you do anything is how you do everything. So you can say that you have this really great culture and we support people in their educational desires around building their careers. And I don't know, we got foosball tables and free coffee and all kinds of stuff. But the way we exit people is really kind of crappy. Well, forget all those perks, forget all the lovely things of trying to create a really good culture. The fact that people are exited that way, that stays with people way more than any other positive experience. I've just started reading one of Adam Grant's books, and you and I, of course, are big fans of Adam Grant. This is his book called Originals, and I've only just started it. But at the very beginning of the book, he, of course, lays the table about how people are often rejected for bringing new ideas to the table. And in fact, some of the data that he has says it's between 50 and 75% of people are feeling such pressure to conform and to not bring their great ideas out and share them, because of lack of psychological safety, because of, again, the way that the culture is. And so organizations really have no one else to blame if their cultures are not shifting when bringing new great people in. Because again, this comes back down to what is truly valued. And you've had this experience and I've had this experience where there are these really lovely, compelling values that an organization holds dear: courage, integrity, collaboration. I'm sure there's a much longer list than what comes to mind. Respect. But when you see what actually happens inside the culture, you realize that those are just words that are in a annual report or painted onto wall in a boardroom. Because really, for organizations to live up to those values, the behaviors have to be aligned. And in this case, again, coming back to JP, I'm not sure what this organization's values are, but I'd be willing to bet that this behavior goes against some of the things that this company says that it holds dear. One thing to do your homework and read the company website. And listen, I'll just add this because it popped into my head. I was coaching somebody recently who's a new client to me. And of course, when I have a new client, I go to the website of the company that they work for to get a sense of what this company does. And again, the values and the culture and their recruiting page, just to get a feel. And so I check this with my new client. We're doing a sort of get to know you discovery call. And I'm like, so these are some of the things I learned about your company. And the first thing he says, yeah, that's all crap.
Right.
So I laughed the way I'm laughing now. And I said, so tell me what your experience is. And he said, well, listen, they talk a good talk. And I think they really want to be that kind of company. But it is chaos here. And great people, but this is not what it's like to work here. So I think there's some work that leaders need to do, senior leaders particularly, to create the kind of cultures where this behavior of Mr. Not Accountable is tolerated.
Yeah. So let's just end on that theme of accountability. Let's just make that the theme for today and for this podcast. If we could just get to a place where people are held accountable for their own behaviors, their own choices, and their own decisions. And that's universal. It's not, there aren't people that are excluded from accountability because they are senior or special in some way. And that's not to say that accountability doesn't have to be like a guillotine. Accountability is coaching. Accountability can be like, we're not going to necessarily say that, oh, this leader should be just sent to the gallows, but perhaps this leader needs some coaching around this and needs some help in this regard to do this part of their job better.
Yeah, listen, leadership requires being able to have conversations of all sorts, objective setting conversations, feedback conversations, letting people go conversations. To me, that's kind of table stakes. Great that there's a whole bunch of other skills that come with building rapport with stakeholders, or there's a whole gamut of things that we hope that our leaders have. But to me, that core essential thing is being able to have conversations with people that uphold dignity. And I think every organization needs to hold everybody in that organization accountable to at least that. So yes, I completely agree with you. Thanks, Deborah.
Okay, Lisa, why don't you tell people where they can find us if they want to send us questions, comments? We're always interested in hearing about people's experiences. I like highlighting stories because I think they're so relatable to people. And as we move forward and the landscape is shifting somewhat under our feet and we're all trying to figure it out, hearing people's stories can be really valuable. So we welcome those, as well as doing our usual digging into topics that are of interest.
Absolutely. So Deborah and I are pretty easy to find on our website at workrevolutionpodcast.com. You can also find us on LinkedIn, where we like to share all kinds of opinions about what we see as the great things in the new emerging workplace practices, but also some of the things that get on our nerves and we're working to change. And you can also reach out to us through our Instagram and just look for Work Revolution and you will find us. And we're grateful that you're joining us on this journey, because together we are all making workplaces healthier, happier, and hopefully with more respect and dignity. Thanks to everyone.
Goodness, I think you're just developing a new slogan on the fly here. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe and give us a review. And follow the Work Revolution podcast on Instagram for more great content and updates about our work. In addition to 2 full episodes a month, we have a monthly Ask Us Anything, where we answer your questions about leadership, career maneuvering, and whatever workplace challenges you're facing. Submit your questions to our website at workrevolutionpodcast.com, where you'll find all our episodes as well as learn more about who we are. Thanks to Bernie at Blue Eye Music for our music theme, and to the team at Podatize for production support. Until next time.